In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Saturday to everybody out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN Fresno. I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports, where I've done my show for the last three-plus years in the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side. First String Sports, as you guys are well aware of, Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. And we had an incredible night of high school football last night. Can't wait to break down the games with you guys. If you guys are unfamiliar with the show, high school sports in the Central Valley, right? It's called the Central Valley Sports Report. So we hit on all the sports. It's obviously football season, so tons and tons of football talk. A little bit of Fresno State talk as well. Obviously, you guys know last week was the big opener at Michigan. It didn't go quite the way we had hoped, but we proved ourselves. We, Fresno State, went toe-to-toe with Michigan. So we're going to talk about that a little bit in the next couple hours. So, again, thanks to First String Sports for sponsoring the show and helping out student-athletes throughout the Central Section. This is the only place where you could get Letterman's jackets, right? I come here early, around 9 o'clock, set up, go over my show notes, do a couple adjustments here and there. And, you know, there are people in here buying their Letterman's jackets, getting them adjusted, showing where you could put the patches on, showing the different options, sizes, all that good stuff. So First String Sports, the only place where you can get that done. You can follow me on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors, or at 1430 ESPN Fresno as well. They do a fantastic job keeping you guys abreast of all the good stuff that happens in the Central Section. All right, thanks to Lizaire Plumbing and Heating as well. Do a great job of sponsoring student athletes in 1430 ESPN. You guys know how hot it's been the last 4 days, right? Not a little heat wave, nothing we can't withstand. Right now it's 82 degrees. The high is going to be 105. Fresno State kickoff is at 7 o'clock and it's at 99 degrees, or it will be 99 degrees, right? The sun will go down, hopefully around 7:20 or so, get behind the stadium, so we'll cool off after that. But yeah, it's definitely a hot one. All right, so what's going on the show today? Well, I'm going to have my breakdown of all the games, or a rundown, a few comments here and there. And after that, Coach Brandon Nagel from Clovis East is coming on the show. Last night we were able to broadcast their, if you haven't heard, get ready for this, 56-3 win at Sanger. Phil Bonatti, me, Pat Hill were on the broadcast. It was a dominating performance from the Timberwolves. They were my number two team coming into the central section into the game. I had Sanger at 9, and it was a bloodbath. They were firing on all phases. Had a 104-yard pick six. Had a blocked punt for a TD. 4 TD passes from Ty Miller. An incredible run by Lindsey Graves. Had the crowd stunned. And a short catch, and a TD run by Donnell Booker Jr. that was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Juked a couple guys, thought that he was down behind the line of scrimmage, took off for about a 55-yard touchdown catch and run. It was unbelievable. But, gosh, Clovis East, you know what I'm going to say? I'm bumping them up. I'm bumping them up to the number one team in the Central Section because they were dominating in all phases. Defensively, they're flying all over the field. They were hitting. They showed speed from side to side. DBs didn't let anything get by them. Kicking game was on point. They were doing those little kind of pooch kicks. They got a lefty kicker who's really good, doing those pooch kicks, sitting right about the 30-yard line. They were able to recover one. So, you know, they're playing like a team on a mission. I'm going to hear straight from Coach Nagel after break. Can't wait to talk to him. Around, 10:35 or so, Austin Kemp, friend of the show, call him my track expert. He was at the Clovis and Frontier game. And how about Clovis coming away with a big win against Frontier? I had Frontier number 5 preseason, but Clovis pulled away in the second half, won 57-27. Deegan Rose had 5 touchdown passes, a touchdown run as well. Austin was at that game. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the rest of the track schools and their remaining 2 games before their bye week. Actually, Buchanan has their bye week after this coming week. And then we're going to get into league play a little bit. So always fun to talk to Austin Kemp about high school football. At 11:03, Jackson Moore from 24/7 Sports is coming on from the Bark Board. Does an absolutely amazing job covering Fresno State and other college pros. I think Hawaii, San Jose State. But he knows the Bulldogs through and through. He knows recruiting. There's a lot of Central kids on that Fresno State roster. And I want to know more about them, where their standing is with the team, where they are on the depth chart. Heck, Jaden Mandel, he's one play away from getting thrown into the game at the quarterback position, right? So, yeah, always love talking with Jackson Moore. He does a great job. All right, so let's hit some scores really quick. I'm going to do a rundown and a few comments. There were 61 games last night in the Central section. There were 5 that were played on Thursday. A couple of note: Golden West of Visalia defeated Mission Oak 51-7. Golden West is putting up a lot of points. They have a lot of speed. They scored 63 the week before against Dinuba. So keep an eye on the Golden West Trailblazers from Visalia. Highland defeated Kennedy 31-15. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot. I got Dave Wilson coming on the show at the bottom of hour number 2, the head coach at Kingsbury. The reason why I thought about that is because Kingsbury's playing Highland, who defeated Kennedy, next week in homecoming. So, yeah, Dave Wilson coming on the show around 11:30. Can't forget that guy coming into First String Sports. Sunnyside defeated Ridgeview 33-0. Bakersfield defeated Stockdale 49-0. Now, in 3 games, Bakersfield has not allowed a point and has outscored opponents 156-0. Now, I think that might change. Why might that change? Well, their next 2 games are against Bullard and Clovis. Nope, not Clovis. Bullard's playing Clovis in week 5. Yeah, Bakersfield, they're going to have a big test. Bullard's going to have a big test as well. They're playing each other next week. All right, another score here. Scroll down a little bit. How about this? Bakersfield Christian beat Central Valley Christian 49-28. Buchanan over Edison. Again, these point totals are crazy. 61-6. Of note, that's Edison's first touchdown of the year. Buchanan held a huge lead at halftime. That game was a running clock. But look at the Bears now 3-0. And another one, Bullard. The Battle of Barstow returned. Bullard defeated Hoover 70-13. 70-13 in a running clock. So that means Bullard scored 70 the week before, 70 yesterday, and in week 1 they scored 35 points at halftime, and the lights didn't come on, so they stopped the game. So they were on a 70 pace in game 1. That is absolutely wild. Centennial of Bakersfield defeated Independence 44-27. I mentioned the 2 Clovis scores, Clovis 57, Frontier 27. Tranquility, Farmersville don't have a score for that one. Fowler defeated Sanger West 31-13. Garza with a nice comeback win, beat Kerman 33-31 at home. Hanford had to hold on to beat St. Joseph 34-27. Kingsbury defeated Dinuba 28-7. We'll talk to Coach Wilson at the bottom of hour number 2 about his program. Lemoore with a nice win against El Diamante 38-6. Madera 42. Paso Robles 21. I believe that game was tied at 21. So Madera storms back and scores the final points in that one. McLean 48. Mendota 21. Congratulations to Coach Pancotti and the Highlanders. They are now 2-0. They had a bye week last week. Reedley with a nice comeback win against Orosi, 24-22. Sierra Pacific defeated Corcoran 41-27. Tulare Union, they are now 3-0, beat Redwood, who might be the best 0-3 team in the Central Section, 35-10. And how about this score? Points aplenty, 112 combined points between Tulare Western and Mount Whitney. Tulare Western scored 8 more scored 60 compared to Mount Whitney's 52. Washington Union beat Torres 34-21. Woodlake beat Hanford West 49-26. And Central, the Grizzlies drove up north to face Turlock and came away with a 28-22 win. They were down some players due to the suspensions. A couple guys were hurt. I think they traveled with about 34 players, but came away with a win in that one against a pretty good Turlock team. Clovis West, nice bounce back win from the Golden Eagles. Played Edison of Stockton and beat them 39-14. And then my number one in the Central section, most people's number one, right? As well they should have been, defending D1 champs. Clovis North traveled down south to take on Jay Serra and fell behind 28-0, couldn't recover, eventually lost 35-6. So their winning streak in the regular season comes to an end. We figured, you know, that Jay Serra, the number 7 team in the state, was going to come back with a vengeance after they came up here last year and Clovis North beat them. So, yeah, I mean, not a terrible, terrible loss, but, yeah, Jay Serra put it on Clovis North 35-6. Scroll down a little bit more. Salmon-Cain Memorial, the score's not on Cal Preps, but I believe they won, I think it was like 18-14. I could be wrong on that. I'll come back and let you guys know about that score. All right, a couple more things of note before we hit the break and talk to Coach Brandon Nagel from Clovis East. I'm sure everybody in the Valley saw it. Thursday night, Monday night, or NFL, Thursday night football, what Xavier Worthy did. 21-yard run, the TD catch, was interviewed after the game alongside Patrick Mahomes. Man, what a NFL debut from the Central grad. How memorable was that game? Well, he got the footballs, right? He got the game balls. We saw Mahomes find the football and give it to Worthy. But Topps, yeah, the card company made a special card of Xavier Worthy. You could buy it on their website. If you go to tops.com, you'll see the Xavier Worthy card right there. You can buy a couple. It's awesome. It says like 2-touchdown NFL debut. You get yourself a Xavier Worthy card for about $12. Really, really cool. On the other side, on the Ravens, I don't know if you guys noticed, but Andrew Voorhees, a Kingsburg grad who's had to sit out all last year due to an ACL injury, started for the Ravens at left guard. That was awesome to see. So two Valley kids on opening night in the NFL. How cool is that? All right, one more fun fact, one more tidbit before we hit the break. Talked a little bit about Boulder and how many points that they're scoring this year at a torrid pace. Well, they scored 42 points in the second quarter in that 73 win last week against Buhat Colony in Atwater. The Central section record for points in a quarter is by Selma. They had 55 points in a 1920 game that ended in, check this out, at 129-0 against Sanger. Obviously, times were much, much different back then, but the record is 55. Buller scores 42, so they had a little ways to go to beat the Central section record. All right, we're going to be talking with Coach Brandon Nagel of Clovis East after this break on 1430 ESPN Fresno, your local sports leader. Back to Central Valley Sports Report. Back in Black, AC/DC. Nice intro song. I love it. All right, so I promised Coach Nagel from Clovis East was coming on the show, and he is on the line right now. Big win last night, a game that we broadcasted on 1430 ESPN, 56-3 at Sanger. He's kind enough to join us this morning, busy morning. So, Coach Nagel, how you doing this morning?
Good. Just out here, we have our elementary carnival for our district, so just out here watching some football.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so explain exactly what the carnival is. It seems like there's something that goes on the day after football in Clovis Unified Saturday. There's something happening. So what, it's the carnival just for the Clovis East section, or who exactly is there?
It's all the sections. Like today, I think it's Clovis South, Clovis High, and Clovis East, and they just have like a round-robin carnival with all the elementary schools. It's kind of their way of doing a three-way scrimmage, but they have all the schools out here.
All right. So never enough football, that's for sure. So nope. Like when you woke up this morning, you're just kind of still thinking about the game and how well you guys play. Like what were some of the thoughts that were running through your mind, maybe even late last night when you were driving home?
I was it was such a hot game. I was really happy. I don't think we had anybody cramp last night, so that was good, you know, knowing that we're in pretty good shape. And then it was a pretty complete game, and that's our two games in a row that I think we've won in all three phases, and it's been nice.
Yeah, I mean, every phase of the game, I mentioned that in my opener, where, you know, the kicking game was on point. Defense was playing lights out. Offense was extremely efficient. I know you're mostly a defensive guy, but what phase of last night's game just impressed you and your staff the most?
I would just say our defense. I mean, I think a lot of people sleep on that. Our defense doesn't get talked about a lot. So I think they've taken that as a chip on their shoulder this year. And so I've been really proud of them. I think that's two games in a row that they've done a good job and flying to the football and being physical.
No, they absolutely were. You know, your big number 54, your run stopper, was surprisingly agile as well, man. I mean, he's 300 pounds, so he was doing a great job. But your number 8 played amazing, Bishop. Number 9, Josh Wilson. But a dude that stuck out to us was number 44, Jack Nelson. He was all over the field, lining up in a couple different spots. But that guy's motor never stopped. And you know, I Phil Benatti and Coach Hill were on the broadcast, and Phil and I in the post game were discussing who the player of the game should be, right? And you know, obviously you're thinking about the offense, the quarterback. Ty Miller had 4 touchdowns, and you know, Blake Matthew had a couple early in the first quarter. But we gave it to 44, man. We gave it to your defensive guy, because I felt like he played a super important role in that defense. Just talk about that guy's performance.
He has an unrelentless motor. I mean, he never stops. He never wants to come off the field. We have to drag him off the field because that guy's just motor, and he's just a great technique. I mean, since game one, he's done such a good job of, he just understands blocking schemes and how to avoid it and to make the right moves. But he plays like 3 positions on D-line right now. We move him around, and it's nice to have that, knowing that, you know, if we need to fix something, we can move him there, and he just does a great job.
Do you give him a lot of freedom? You said you guys move him around, but do you give him some freedom on the defensive end to move around where he sees fit?
Yeah, he plays inside, outside. We rotate our guys, and he's just one of our guys that we know we can play in. He can play inside. And so it's nice to have that guy. So, you know, we just have different, you know, D-line personnel groups, and that's what allows them to move around.
And, you know, I've been to a few of your practices this year, and we've had some good conversations. And one of them that stuck out to me is you feel like this year's team, you don't have to play a lot of guys two ways, right? Booker was playing both ways and a couple other guys. But, you know, I didn't see Harold Duvall, your standout wide receiver, playing on defense at all. He might have slipped in a couple plays. But how important is that for this year's team, that the team just seems fresh during games? You mentioned they didn't cramp up once. But how important is that you're going to have a lot of guys not going two ways and getting tired out?
Yeah, it's really good. It allows guys to get better at their craft. When you have a guy practicing for 2 hours, you know, or more than that, you know, just offense or just defense, it allows us to get better. It allows us to, you know, focus in on schemes and techniques and things like that. And so that was one of our goals as a coaching staff this year, was to make sure that we could try to be as, you know, two platoon as possible, to allow that, so we can make adjustments during the game and things like that. So, you know, and there's going to come games where we're going to need guys to go both ways. But as of right now, we haven't had to do that much, so it's nice.
And that block punt must have felt good, because we talked a little bit after the game. And what is that, really your fourth block punt this season in only 3 games?
Yeah, we've had technically 5, but one of them was called a penalty. So, yeah, we've had 4, yeah, so 4 so far. And so it's awesome. It's awesome to have kids that want to go. So now our guys, you know, want to play special teams. And you know, it's – not everybody wants to do that, and this group's a little different. We have guys that want to be on the special teams, that want to make an impact, and that is really fun as a coach when you have guys, you know, wanting to play all phases of the game.
Well, and we're seeing that on the kickoff returns as well. Like, your kicker's, you know, doing a fantastic job placing it where he wants. But, you know, I see a lot of different numbers there in the kickoff team, and those guys, man, they're pumped up when they make tackles as well.
Yes. You got guys, you know, that – you know, we're pretty deep that don't get to get on the field all the time. And so when they get their chance on special teams, I think it's really exciting for them to go out there and show that, you know, show what they can do as well. So
talking with Brandon Nagel, the head football coach at Clovis East. So we got to talk about Ty Miller, and he's just a special guy, right? And, you know, Coach Hill and I broadcasted one of his games when he was a freshman, and we just were just amazed at his toughness. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of growth from your freshman to senior year. But just talk about that. Talk about the growth mature-wise and physically to where Ty was as a freshman being thrown into the fire to what he's now doing for his senior season.
Man, there's just so many different intangibles that he has. It's just being an older guy. It's just, I always felt like he was the young kid, and it's awesome to see him be the old guy now, you know, if you want to say that, being a senior. And every year he's just gotten better, and I think it's just more of just his leadership. He doesn't do it with his voice. He just does it by his actions. And, you know, like, played a football game all last night, and then this morning he's here at the elementary school as well, you know, watching all the little kids. It's things like that that show that leadership. And, I mean, I could talk about him for forever. I mean, he just leads in every way, and it's really cool to have as a coach. I've never had that as a coach, you know, a quarterback for 4 years, so it's cool. It's really awesome.
And his decision-making on the field is, you know, it's extraordinary, right? And he knows when to tuck it. He knows when to get down, right? Sometimes you're probably thinking, get down, save yourself, don't get hit. But his decision-making on the field is just extraordinary too, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, he's got so many games under his belt. I mean, coming into here, I think he already had 40 games under his belt. So, he knows the offense. He's obviously been in it for 4 years. And so he's starting, you can see like that maturity of being a senior now that like, okay, this is what I need to do. This is the read I got. And so, yeah, I wish he would get down a little bit more. He still has that, like, he wants to run guys over like he's a running back, but, but yeah, for the most part, his decisions, that's why he's back there. So.
Well, there was one play where he wanted to score on the goal line. He put his shoulder down like a linebacker, and every once in a while he'll do something like that.
Yep. And then you want to get mad at him, but you can't because he wants to get in. He wants to score, and he wants to put points on the board for the team. And so I'm understanding. I actually was talking about that with him this morning. I'm like, can you slide there? And he's like, nope.
Okay. Not at the goal line. And he did that, you know, he'd get his first down, right, and he'd slide. He's like, okay, I'll take that and line up and live to see another day and another play. All right, Coach, a couple more minutes here. I want to go back to a couple runs from last night. Booker's touchdown reception, that run was remarkable. And then your running back, Lindsey Graves, had a great run as well. Just talk about those two plays and just the resilience that your players had on those.
Yeah, I think Lindsey, you know, I think he felt like he wasn't running the way he wanted to. And so I think he was on a mission there. He finally had his chance, and he wanted to score, and he was going to make sure nothing was going to stop him on that. Booker's, I didn't really get to see. I was over there in the tent talking to the defense, and all of a sudden I look over, and he's good taking it 60 yards down the field. So, but those guys, they want to score. And then so that's just the kind of the mindset for our guys is when they get a chance, and we have so many weapons that when they get a chance, they have a chance to score, you know, they want to take advantage of it.
One more question here for you, Coach. Thanks again for your time. All right, so next week you got a big one. You're playing Grant at home at La Monica. Coach Hill used his prowess, and he called our boss and said, we're going to do that game. So we're going to broadcast back-to-back Clovis East games, so we're going to do that one against Grant. What's the early word on those guys? I know they got a really good quarterback, so what kind of dogfight are you expecting that one?
Oh, man, they're big, physical, well-coached. It's going to be a tough test. We're going to have to bring our A game if we're going to compete with those guys. I think they were state runner-up last year, so, I mean, they have a program, a tradition of winning, and that's kind of why we scheduled the game, because we want to see where we're at when we face, you know, other teams outside the section.
All right, can't wait for that one. So the Timberwolves are 3-0 entering next week. They finish with Lemoore in non-league, a bye week, and then starts the track. All right, Coach Nagel, always great to catch up with you. Thanks for taking the time, and try to rest
no
up
problem.
This weekend, okay?
Me on.
You bet. You bet. All right, Coach Nagel. Bye. 56-3 over Sanger. I think a lot of people are like, man, that is a demolition of a pretty good Sanger team this year. All right, we're going to bring in Austin Kemp. He was at Clovis and Frontier yesterday. We're going to talk about the rest of the track and where they stand right now. You're listening to 1430 ESPN.
Will you hold the line when every one of them is giving up and giving in? Tell me, in this house of mine.
Dayek score. So that was a 21-10 win. I got the winning team right. Memorial won. I said 18-14, I think, but yeah, 21-10 in that game. All right. So I just had a good conversation with Coach Brandon Engel of Clovis East, and I mean, I can say it, right? I mean, Clovis East is my number one team now. After watching Clovis North last week, they're firing on all cylinders, and for a high level team to be playing that well in week three, there were a few procedure mistakes, a couple flags, but I mean, it was a complete football game. To see a team play at that level in week three is very, very impressive. All right, time to bring in Austin Kemp, kind enough to join us here at First String Sports, has a great eye for football. Yesterday he was at the Clovis and Frontier game, watching that game on Max Preps every once in a while, right? Check in, and all of a sudden it's what, 57-27 final. I'm like, wow, how'd they get up to 57? But Austin was there at Tim Simons Field at Daryl LaMonica Stadium, right? That's the correct way to say that. All right. So Austin, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, I'm excited to be here. I'm hitting a game, it seems like, every week, sometimes two. But I mean, you know, nothing I like doing more than checking out the local sports scene and talking with you about it the next day.
Yeah, and right, I tweeted this out, right? So Thursday was NFL, mm-hmm. Friday night, obviously high school football, Saturdays for college football in Fresno State, and then we're running back with the NFL on Sunday and Monday. So it's officially here, Austin. Where the wives kind of, you know, say goodbye to their husbands sometimes. And
hey, we have to do what we got to do, right? It's Thursday through Sunday is every day is football day. So, you know, it's just
It's
part of the life.
It's it. It's built into our DNA.
Exactly.
Right?
I know my wife's listening, I think, probably right now, and I think she gets it, but who knows?
And my daughter and her husband moved back into town, and they're moving into their apartment today, mm-hmm. right? So right after the show, you know, I got to do some life things, right?
Exactly.
Spend
exactly.
some time with the family. I got to help my daughter and her husband move. So
we call it the window of opportunity.
Yes,
you got to create your windows. Because you're going to be spending so much time watching.
Exactly, right? Yeah, so that gives me a week of grace, right? The rest of the week is
exactly.
Means showing grace. All right, so let's just get right into that game. So let's first of all talk about your expectations going into that game, right? So sometimes with these Bakersfield schools, we don't quite know. We know Liberty, right? Because they beat Clovis West here last week. What were your expectations going into the game, and who came out impressing you the most?
Yeah, so like going into the game, I thought it was kind of a coin flip. And like you said, it's so hard to predict some of these Bakersfield teams sometimes because we don't have the access to go see them. We don't have as many contacts in the area. So like what we hear is kind of what we hear. We don't know if it's factual or not. But there were people talking coming into the year like that Frontier was probably the best team down in Bakersfield. And I've heard a couple people say that, and I kind of ran with it. So, you know, going into the game, I was like, you know, Clovis, they were kind of shaky looking against CBC week one, and then people are telling me Frontier's the best team in Bakersfield. So I was like, you know, I think this might be a coin flip, and maybe even Frontier might be slightly better. I picked Clovis, and I'm thankful that I did, because that game, 57-27, the final score, it's going to sound weird, but it was more of a blowout than that score showed. Frontier couldn't do much on offense. They scored on a kickoff return as time expired in the second half. It was a squib kick that rolled around. The guy picked up and ran it back.
Okay.
And then the first kickoff to start the second half, they got the ball and ran that back.
Was it another one of those squibs?
That was kick deep. That was normal. But you're talking about two touchdowns in two plays off of kickoff returns. But Clovis High, they dominated that game on defense, on offense, and you know, I saw Liberty last week down here when they played Clovis West, and I don't even think it's close between what Liberty and Frontier are. I think Liberty's the class down there, and that's kind of what I saw.
Well, okay, so you know, Frontier had a pretty good run last year. I think it was two years ago they were in Division II. They had a really good quarterback last year, so I know they had to replace their quarterback. Talking about Frontier. So Deegan Rose, right? A lot of talk about him. Again, got to remind ourselves, he's still a junior. He's got this year and then one more year next year, committed to Oregon State. Is this the second time you've watched Clovis?
This year?
Yep. All right, so thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I said it last time too. It's just he's so in control. Like whenever you need a first down, if it's like third and six or third and eight, second and eight, and just you're looking for something to move the chains, he knows exactly where to go with the football, and he's so comfortable making those, like, not necessarily short, but those intermediate throws, whether it's over the middle to the sideline, he can pretty much put it wherever he wants. I know you might want to see a little bit more from the deep ball, but that'll come in time, and you know, the more reps you get. But those intermediate throws, he is so dangerous because he finds the hole in the secondary, he makes the right read, and he delivers a strike pretty much every time.
I saw some highlights on ABC 30. Of him throwing the ball, and that's exactly what they showed on his highlight of the Clovis highlights, just rolling left, rolling right.
Yeah, on the throws on the run were super impressive. Like he had a few where he was getting out of the pocket, and it's not an easy throw, but he makes them look so easy when he's rolling out and just throws a strike for 12 yards at the sticks, and it's easy. It's so easy for him, and that's what makes it so dangerous.
Effortless, right? And you could tell that's he works on that.
Yep, 100%.
Right. I know he works with Greg Pinelli, so yeah. Yeah, rolling out left, rolling out right, doesn't matter.
A guy I do want to mention for Clovis is, you might want to help me on the name, number seven. I think his last name was Malone. I can't remember if he was a transfer coming in this year.
Yeah, he is.
But that guy, I was watching this game with my brother last night, and I'm not talking about like college star power. I'm not talking about college potential, whatever. He is a top five skill position player in the Central Valley. He is so dangerous with the football, whether it's on special, like he ran back the opening kick last night to the 1 yard line. On offense, he does a million things for them. He is just so dangerous and so confident with the football. It would be hard to find a better skill position player than him in this section, just because of everything that he can do.
Yeah, DeJure Malone, 5'9", 165 pounds, transferred from Edison. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mentioned how Edison's really struggled this year. Mm-hmm. There's Max Exodus there. So, yeah, so that just adds a different dimension for Clovis High. All right, so Maddox Merrill, I didn't know this, but I saw on social media that is he hurt? He didn't play?
Yeah, he played the first possession, and I don't even know if it was the whole first possession. But he came up gimpy after like one of his first runs, and you know he was limping off the field, and he didn't return. Their running game was still able to produce yards pretty well, but if they don't have him for a period of time, that's still going to be a huge loss, because even though they were able to run the ball last night, again, you talk about adding a different dimension. That dude is so good between the tackles, so they're going to need him when they get to those track games, so we kind of hope that it's not a serious injury.
And so week four, we already announced, or at least I did, hope we don't get in trouble for this, but we're going to broadcast Clovis East and Grant at La Monica. But the week after that, I got it circled. It's not confirmed, but Clovis and Bullard, mm-hmm, right before their bye week. That's going to be a really good one. All right, so Austin, we're looking at all six of the track schools right now. Let's get some thoughts on how you think they've performed so far, and a little bit about their next two games, and maybe one of these schools might enter league at 5-0. We don't know. So Buchanan, so they got a tough Liberty game next week. They're 3-0, scoring a lot of points, playing a little bit better than a lot of people thought. You know, what are your thoughts on Buchanan so far?
Yeah, they've definitely taken their game to a new level compared to last year. I know their strength schedule hasn't been the toughest, but they're doing to opponents what you're supposed to do when you are in a different class than them. This week against Liberty will pretty much tell us exactly who they are, because I think Liberty is probably a top 3-4 team in the section. That's going to be tough. I mean, going down on the road is always tough in Bakersfield. I mean, even when Coach Giordano was at Buchanan, all those Liberty games were super high level, yeah, and super tough to win. So,
well, they've been their nemesis, right?
Exactly. They would always meet in the playoffs. They'd always play in the regular season, and those games were absolute wars. That's going to be a tough game for the Bears, but you know, all of a sudden, if they can go down there and pull it off, you're talking about Buchanan as being a contender. I think it's going to be tough to do so, but that's why you play the games. And then they play Paso.
Yeah, so they got a bye week on the 20th.
Bye week, and then Paso Robles, yeah. And they'll beat Paso.
Yeah.
But we're looking at a potential 4-1 team heading into track play, and you know, where they were last year, I think you take it.
Yeah, and then they open with Clovis on October 4th. All right, let's move to Clovis West. That incredible win against Edison Huntington Beach to open up the season. And then the Thursday game came back to earth a little bit against a really good Liberty team and a nice win. So, you know, kind of a different types of games for Clovis West in their first three. They are 2-1 that win up north against Stockton. Playing Edison of Fresno, so I think we could count that as a win. And then Turlock, who gave Central a pretty good game. We'll get to that in a second. But, hey, Clovis West with the freshman quarterback, I mean, I think they're having a good season so far.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it would be tough to go on the road. The first time on the road with a freshman QB, you know, is usually pretty tough. And they went on the road last night for the first time with a freshman QB and other young players. And they took care of business pretty good. It was like a 39-14 win. And again, we're talking about out-of-town teams. We don't know how good Edison of Stockton is, but they had a win under their belt. So probably a pretty decent team. So I thought that was a good win by Clovis West. They'll hammer Edison of Fresno. The Edison Tigers, they'll hammer them this week.
One of the three Edisons are playing.
And then that last non-league game against Turlock, based on how Turlock played against Central last night, that could be a pretty, like, coin flip type game, I'd say, as well.
Yeah, sleeper game. So that's going to be a home game for Clovis West. All right, so Clovis High, they are 3-0. They didn't play Salinas. So one fun fact about this, I'm bringing up this tweet here. So Salinas and Clovis, they've locked up a multi-year deal. They're going to play each other in football, and they're going to have a trophy. It is a rodeo belt buckle because they Clovis and Salinas have the two oldest rodeos in the state of California. So how cool is that?
I saw that tweet this week, and I showed my wife. I was like, how legit is this? Like, the two oldest rodeos, and is it in California?
Yeah, in California.
And they're playing for a rodeo belt buckle. So when I saw that news, I was like, that is legit, and they should sign a 100-year contract and literally play that every year and hype it up, because that's awesome. So that would be a fun game to follow on Friday. And then they got the Buller Knights to close out non-league, and we'll see if Bullard's undefeated when they get to that game, because they have a big one this week. Yeah. But I love myself a good old-fashioned Clovis-Bullard game, or I know when Bullard and Clovis West used to play in the past, but I love when Bullard plays these Clovis schools, and I think they should play more of them, honestly.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good game. Looking forward to that one. All right, so Central, you know, Justin Garza game, right, that sparked a lot of controversy. Then they beat that Eastern Alaska team, and then a tough game against Turlock. Now they're playing Edison Stockton, and there's our old foe Liberty again. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a home one for the Grizzlies. So, you know, quarterback play has always been a staple for Central. A little bit down this year, but, you know, their kid threw six touchdowns the week before. I think struggled a little bit last night. But skill players, defense is really strong for Central. So how's Central stacking up, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think they're playing about as expected as I thought they would. They're still one of the top teams in the section. And that quarterback that you were talking about, I think he's only a sophomore, right?
And going on the road last night, that's tough, right?
We just talked about, like, going on the road for the first time can be tough. And he was a sophomore on the road at Turlock for the first time. But I mean, I don't think he played his greatest game, but it's an experience that you learn from. And, you know, they go on the road this week against Edison Stockton, a team they should beat. But again, since he has that experience of going on the road and doing it, I think he'll probably build off of it, and then hopefully try to create that momentum for that huge Liberty showdown in week five?
Yeah.
Because that's going to be at Central. It's going to be rocking probably two top four teams in the section, I'd say.
Yeah.
Or close to around there, I'd say. But yeah, that's going to be a huge game. So you want to beat Edison to Stockton, create some good momentum, and get ready for the big one.
And the big one in league, they start off with the Whopper, right? Rematch of last year's D1 finals. They're going to take on Clovis North at home to open up track on October 4th.
I'm looking at that Central schedule right now. I know they have a bye mixed in there, but they go Liberty, Clovis North, and Clovis East back to back to back. That's a gauntlet right there.
It is. Yep. That is, right? And then couple Thursday games as well. So that's good for me, because I can check out those Thursday games. So, all right, let's move on to Clovis North. 2-1 after losing to Jay Serra. They got CVC next week. And then a Saturday game, check that out, against Los Alamitos. And last time I checked, Cal High Sports had them at number 9 in the state, Los Al. So that's going to be another big test for the Broncos. Right, it's hard. Now they're the hunted. Right, everyone's gunning for them.
Yep.
You know, if you knew, you knew last year that they're going to have a good team. They ran the table, 10-0 in the regular season, then winning the D1 title. So, what do we chalk that loss to Jay Serra? Is it just, I mean, a better team? Right, I mean, number 5 team in the state.
Yeah, I mean, they're Jay Serra, and so Jay Serra came here last year, and Clovis North kind of bullied him a little bit. But it's so. It's starting to happen here, too, but especially in those down south schools, even in the Bay Area, you just don't know what these rosters are going to look like from year to year with the amount of recruiting that goes on and all the transfers that happen. And, you know, I know we're not experts of SoCal football, but Jay Serra, they have made a huge leap this season. So it kind of makes you wonder, okay, well, how many people were added to their roster? So they probably added a few people. They probably have some D1 guys on it now. And, you know, I think that you just chalk it up to they probably played a more talented team, and they went on the road, and they're again, Clovis North is still breaking in a new quarterback. They're still breaking in new offensive linemen. So sometimes it's just the perfect storm, and you get beat, and it is what it is.
Well, I can probably guess that the Jay Serra coaching staff did not like losing to Clovis North, and I'm sure they game planned for a long – guys, they are not – blank, whatever, right. doing this
and
to us
I remember watching that Jay Serra game last year when they came here, and their entire offense was snapping it to their quarterback, and he'd run around, and he'd either find someone open or just, I don't know. It felt like to me there was nothing of substance there. So to your point, they probably have revamped their offensive game plan, and obviously the number 5 team in the state looking a lot better now.
Yeah, and they got a new quarterback, so I heard that guy. Is very talented. All right, so Clovis East, talked a lot about them, deservedly so on the show so far. 56-3 win at Sanger. You know, I can't emphasize enough how impressive they were last night. 3-0 going into that Grant game on next Friday, and then they finished with Lemoore away before taking on Clovis West to open track. So thoughts on Clovis East? I mean, heck, you know, we could even go back to 6-7 years ago, how they were the doormat of the track, and then you fast forward and here they are.
I mean, they definitely have a lot better players now than they had 5-6 years ago, that's for sure. So that helps. But their coaching staff's doing a heck of a job. I mean, this Grant game, I think I haven't followed how Grant is. I know they have a good quarterback, so that they could maybe come in and score some points. I don't think it was the hardest non-league schedule still. I mean, you look at, like, I know Lemoore can be okay. Kingsburg, it is what it is. And even Sanger, I mean, they got torched by Hanford last week. So what do you think Clovis East is going to do to them? But nonetheless, they're scoring points, and it's been super impressive. If we had to do like a power ranking right now, you might be putting Clovis East number 1 in the section. But I haven't seen Clovis East in person yet this year, but I'm hoping to
next week,
probably
maybe?
Get to this game on Friday
right.
and check them out.
All right. We've got about another minute here with Austin Camp. All right. If I were to throw this question at you, looking at these 6 track schools and their schedule, which of these schools has the best chance to win the track this year?
You know, I know what we just talked about them, but I think right now it might be Clovis East just because of having the quarterback experience, having the skill guys who are explosive and their defense coming around, which is, I feel like that was kind of their Achilles heel last year, was that defense, and they look like they've turned a corner. I would like to see them against a legit offense, which maybe that Salt Lake City team.
They were big.
Maybe they were. Mm-hmm. But I don't know much. So Clovis East looks extremely tough, but you know, at the end of the day, you still got to stop those 2 Clovis North running backs, and no one, I know Jay Serra did, but no one in this section has done it in a year. So until I see it, that's going to be tough to pick against.
And then there's Central and Clovis saying, come on, guys, right?
Exactly.
Come on. Don't, you guys can't forget about us. All right. Good stuff as always, Austin. You going to the Fresno State game tonight?
No Fresno State game tonight. But one thing I wanted to put on everyone's radar, you'll probably mention it today, Bakersfield versus Bullard next week is – in my mind, game of the week. Both 3-0, old school powers, and that game kind of has me excited.
First one to 50, maybe wins
first
that one.
First one to 50, exactly.
All right, thanks, Austin, for coming in. Appreciate you as always. Bring in our next couple of weeks, and we'll see where these teams stand.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking with Jackson Moore after a break here on ESPN Sports Break. You're listening to 1430 ESPN, your local sports leader.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Sticking with us, hour number two. The Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. All right, Jason Pappy. I love, one of the great things I love about doing my show here at First String Sports is obviously this is the high school headquarters, right? In the Letterman's jacket room, but got tons of coaches that come in through and wave and say hi and sometimes throw stuff at me and try to knock me off my game. But Jason Pappy, baseball coach, walking in as well. So always good to see coaches throughout the Central section. Had a good conversation with Coach Nagel, Clovis East. Austin Kemp just came on, breaking down the track. If you miss any part of the conversations, you could go back to the website, 1430ESPN.com, under podcasts. Go to Central Valley Sports Report. You can listen to any show, there's any interviews that you miss. It's I've had some really fun guests. And, you know, one of my highlights in the Cleveland Guardians took care of the Los Angeles Dodgers last night is Stephen Vogt, right? Just a Valley guy from Visalia. I had him on the show for an hour a couple years ago. Now he's probably going to be the AL Manager of the Year. We got a lot of fun stories, a lot of players that we love to follow. Xavier Worthy, obviously, won from Thursday night. So, you know, we love our Central Valley kids for a reason. We follow them. We're a tight-knit group. And, Bulldogs are playing tonight as well. We love ourselves some Bulldogs. All right, so got Jackson Moore in the house right now, 247 Sports, barkboard.com. Goes on Tony D's Bulldog Hour show all the time. See him on the news. He pops up on our sportscaster shows. ABC, right? You go on with ABC?
Bulldog Insider.
Bulldog Insider.
Frequently on 24.
All right, great stuff. So Jackson's kind enough to join us here at First String Sports. All right, obviously the Michigan experience, right, was fun for you. I texted you, you going? You're like, yeah, I'm going this year. So awesome. What's the vibe there, man, right? You see it on TV. Obviously, I've never been there, but, you know, you see the experiences on TV and, you know, Tennessee and Alabama and all these big schools. So what was your experience like as far as how big football is in the stadium and all that stuff regarding Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, it was wild to be – the capacity is listed at 107, and they announced 110,660. And it's kind of interesting when – I mean, we got there like 3 hours before kickoff, and you walk on the field and look around. I took photos all game long, so I got to have that kind of on-the-field experience. And it doesn't particularly look that much more massive than the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum or that kind of thing, but it's kind of deceptively built. There's a lot more seats in the end zone, and it kind of goes – out instead of up. So I know the Bulldog fans that were there, a lot of them said they were in rows 89 to 95 and they didn't look that far away. They said they had a pretty good view. So some of the Michigan fans said they kind of probably put more people in those seats and bleachers than most people would. Maybe they pack it in a little bit more, but yeah, it was a really neat experience. And it didn't get overly loud, I think, because the way Fresno State played that game, they really did take the crowd out of it for a long time. But towards the end, especially when two of those interceptions got called back, I mean, that was the loudest the game got all game, was that crowd got booing, basically.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, yeah, there were a few moments where you're like, okay, if it was Michigan, Ohio State, and it's 35 to 34, it would sound like this probably for 3 hours straight.
I heard those boos, and, you know, it was fun because I thought Fresno State, we got some calls. We got some calls at Michigan. Referee calls went our way. How about, like, the history of the stadium? Was there places to walk through where they had, you know, maybe some posters up or some, you know, Hall of Fame statues or anything like that?
It's kind of funny you mention that because the tunnel is just gray.
Really?
It's about
kinda a drab. Huh?
It's about a minute long walk. It feels like you're kind of in a fun house that's where the media goes through the same tunnel the teams do, and it just feels like you're kind of walking forever. It's like, imagine if there was a just a big roof over the ramp at Bulldog Stadium, and you couldn't tell. It just felt like you were walking down that thing like forever. The walls just keep moving. So I was told before I got there, embrace the tunnel. A lot of teams lose the game in that tunnel. That's like just the experience of going down that walk, and then all of a sudden, boom, 110,000 fans. It was pretty surreal. But, you know, not a whole ton of fanfare. Even the national championship, they kind of briefly said before the game, welcome the 2023 champs. And that was like there wasn't a big banner or anything that flew out. So, I mean, it's just kind of a place that speaks for itself. They don't have to dress it up in there.
No flyby, no you know, stealth bombers going by or anything like that. All right, so how about on the field, right? You know, now that you've had, you know, a week basically to reflect on it, obviously, you know, I'm sure everything was swirling in your mind during and after the game as well. What grade would you give the Bulldogs coming out of that football game?
I mean, I think the defense deserves an A or as close to it as possible. They played about as good as they possibly could. They I mean, that was a tough matchup in terms of the Michigan O-line. That's the biggest, best group they're going to see all season long, and they handled them pretty well pretty much all game long. The Wolverines only had one length of the field touchdown drive the whole game, and I thought the defense was going to play pretty well, but that exceeded my expectations. So it's a bummer that the final score says 30, because it doesn't really reflect what the defense did in that game. And offensively, you know, it's I kind of give them an incomplete grade just because they were really outmatched. They played a very funky game plan just to kind of try to stay in the game and give themselves a shot late. And the offense isn't going to look like that the rest of the way. They're not going to play that style of football. And unfortunately, Mikey did miss some throws even when they were there. So it was a rough time for the offense. You saw them in a couple of spurts get going, and maybe if that pick six is a touchdown towards the end, things get real interesting at the very end. But, yeah, there was you know, not a lot to carry over from the offense.
You know, the receivers made a couple really, really nice plays, and I think the throw, one of the throws you're referring to is that, still have it in my mind, that throw to Delana on the right-hand side, where if he just puts that in front of him, Delana doesn't have to turn around and contort his body, right? I mean, it's a different ball game after that as well.
Yeah, it kind of took me through what we saw a little bit last year, where first game, Mikey Keene's making these crazy throws while he's getting hit at Purdue. And then over the course of the year, as those hits piled up, you know, he was trying to get the ball out a little faster, feet moving a little faster. And when you're facing three or four NFL defensive linemen and your O-line's, you know, not your strong point by any means, it's tough to stay composed and keep your feet there. And I mean, he saved himself in a few cases, but probably cost himself some throws he could have made otherwise.
I want to talk about Sacramento State game in just a second here, but I'm curious, Jackson, about how Fresno State is perceived, right? And we're always curious about that, right? How are we perceived, in, you know, throughout the country? And Pat Hill, you know, beloved Pat Hill, you know, obviously Jim Sweeney, for those that knew Jim Sweeney, right, that was very respected. But when Pat got on the scene, right, then everybody knew about Fresno State throughout the country. Going in there, what kind of was, you know, the perception of Fresno State driving over here? So listening to a little national radio talk, and they were previewing the Texas and Michigan game. They're getting smoked, by the way, right now, 24-3, right? Last time we checked, by Texas. He said something I didn't like. Like, he said it was a warm-up. Michigan's game against Fresno State was a warm-up game. That's exactly what he said. And so, you know, if you hear that, you kind of get a little, you know, upset, right? And so what is the perception, you think, for Fresno State throughout the country, and specifically Michigan last week?
Yeah, well, when we got there, you know, we're taking an Uber to the stadium and say we're here for the game, and driver says, oh, it's a pushover game this week. It's like, well, we're from the side. We're hoping there's going to be a little more push than that.
Yeah.
And even some of the more educated fans were like, you know, thinking more about Texas than Fresno State. I was in a room of photographers, and some guy's like, is this team any good? Like, who's Fresno State? I'm like, what do you know?
Yeah, like, do your own research,
yeah,
right?
And then I tell him, well, they went to Purdue. They went to Arizona State. They collected $3 million and won two games. So this isn't anything new for Fresno State. I mean, bigger than those two games. But so I don't think there was a lot of expectation from the Michigan fans about the Bulldogs coming in, and I think by the time the third and fourth quarters were rolling around that there were a lot of nervous fans in that stadium. I know a lot of the feedback after the game was how surprised they were, how well Fresno State played, and how physical they were. I mean, that's the biggest surprise. You think you're Michigan and you're playing some Mountain West school, you're just going to dominate the line of scrimmage, and especially on offense, and the Wolverines didn't do much with the ball. So I think Fresno State, you know, much like a lot of those Pat Hill years when they went to some big schools, they may not have won all those games, but they left a mark about who they were. And that's what Coach Kipper said in his first press conference with us in July, that when the Bulldogs, when you play the Bulldogs, you're going to know who we are, win, lose, or however the game goes. You're going to feel it afterwards.
I love it. Love it. Yeah, that's what we hoped. And you also said, you know, the crowd was a little subdued because Fresno State, they were in it the whole game. And, you know, then they started booing when those interceptions were called back. So, all right, good to hear. So let's talk about tonight's game, 7 o'clock kickoff. It's supposed to be 99 degrees. Expectations coming into this one, right? I'm sure Sac State's thinking the same thing. We're not going to be pushed over, right? We're no pushovers as well. But what are your expectations? What are you looking for tonight?
Yeah, before I went to Michigan, I was at CFQ Stadium in San Jose Thursday for the Spartans and the Sac State Hornets. So I've seen all four quarters of both of these teams. The Hornets, I mean, they were up 14-0 on San Jose State right out of the gates. They had a lead in the fourth quarter early, and game just really kind of collapsed on them at the very end. So probably much more like the Bulldogs. They think that their performance isn't indicative of what their score was at San Jose State and that they played with a better opponent pretty well. I think for Fresno State, it's all about unleashing the offense, all the stuff that they couldn't do against Michigan, all the plays that they were too worried to call. They get thrown out there today, and I think the Bulldogs are going to be pretty successful. The Hornets, they've got a – it's pretty neat. They've got a very Valley-centric defensive line. I mean, pretty much the starting lineup and the second team just about are all local guys, but not anything like the 340-pound athletes that Fresno State just faced. So I think the Bulldogs are going to have their way at the line of scrimmage and air it out a bit, let Mikey get comfortable, and do a lot of good things on offense. I also think just because the Bulldogs – we're very stingy on defense against Michigan, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do the exact same thing to the Hornets' spread-out offense. It's a totally different challenge. I think the Hornets will probably have some moments where they make some highlights, but I think after watching the two teams over the weekend, I think my stock went up in Fresno a little bit, and I'm down a little bit on Sac State. Their quarterback, Caden Bennett, took a real bad shot late in the game. I don't know if he's going to be himself tonight, and if he's not, that changes things pretty dramatically. So I think the biggest question mark here is there any letdown from Michigan to Sac State, which we've seen many Fresno State teams, even last year,
Eastern
from Purdue
Washington.
To Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
Exactly. Coach Coyle told us the Sac State game plan scouting notes were waiting on the bus for the Bulldogs after they left the Big House. So they set the tone early. Coach Skip's energy is infectious. Practice was very high energy this week, so I don't think there's going to be any letdown.
I agree on all accounts, right? And from watching Tim Skipper, you know, his press conferences and reading about him, and from what everybody on the end, guys like you, are saying about him, right? I mean, how could you not come out fired up for this home opener, right? Skip has come down that ramp many times as a player, as an assistant coach, but this is his first as a head coach, right? And these players are going to run through a wall for him. That's kind of what my expectations are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the context of the Michigan game was going to be big. You know, if you lose in a heartbreaker, if you get blown out, if you just get banged up, like when the Bulldogs went to USC and had all those big injuries, if any of those three things happen, it could be tough to get up for Sac State, but they cleared all of those. I mean, it was respectable. It was enough to leave them kind of motivated to get better, but still feel good about themselves and also not be too injured. So I think they're fired up about this one, and everyone knows how good Sac State is and how close the Bulldogs came to disaster against Eastern Washington last year, so they're ready for it.
Oh, man, yeah, I was pretty nervous there last year watching that game. So, yeah, I'll be there looking forward to that game. So obviously it's only week one, right? We're talking about week three just finished in high school football, but we're in week two now for college football. You know, can't quite gauge all the other schools right now, but where are the dogs stacking up as far as Mountain West Conference goes?
Yeah, I think it's still kind of a three-team race. That's how it looked in the preseason, and so far that hasn't changed. Boise State was kind of the heavy favorite by the outside media, which I don't think the gap's that wide. I kind of look at Boise State, UNLV, and Fresno State all pretty even, but the Broncos' offense looked like what people expected. Their defense,
running back, right?
Yeah. The defense, on the other hand, did not look very good at all in their opener. So I think a lot of people are kind of pulling back on the Boise State hype right now.
All right, really quick.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. So Malachi Nelson, where's he at? So, because he's from Los Alamitos. Mm-hmm. And when they came and played Buchanan, I thought Jaden Mandel outplayed this kid, right? And he was a five-star guy going to USC. Gets some money, goes to Boise. What's his status right now?
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of the hype was like, Boise's got this five-star quarterback. They're going to be good. And he didn't even win the starting job.
He didn't.
They've got the redshirt freshman that the Bulldogs saw in Valley Children's Stadium last year, who's a solid quarterback but still young. You know, he's not kind of the guy you expect to lead a team to the college football playoff.
Yeah.
That's the new setup this year. So kind of keep an eye on them. UNLV went to Houston and won pretty convincingly. I don't think Houston's very good, but still, that's a Power 4 road win. That's impressive. A lot of other teams just kind of up in the air. I think Wyoming and Air Force were kind of in that next tier. Neither of them have looked very good so far. Colorado State went to Texas, and now maybe it's understandable why they got blown out so bad based on what the Longhorns are doing today. And I think you got to kind of keep an eye on, I mean, San Jose State and Hawaii are two teams I also cover for 24/7. And I just felt like 9-10, that's just too low in the preseason poll for these teams. And Hawaii nearly beats UCLA. I think San Jose State might really catch some eyes with what they do at Air Force today. I think it's if they can not let Air Force have the ball for 40 or 45 minutes, they're going to win that one as underdogs on the road.
All right. Great breakdown, Jackson. I am curious about where a lot of our Central Valley athletes, our high school kids, right, how they're doing at Fresno State. Our friend Stephen Hicks did a great job. He does this every year, and I retweet it, but he lists all the players from the Valley that are playing D1 colleges elsewhere. So a lot of fun stuff on that. But let's focus on those that are playing at Fresno State. All right, so I mentioned Jaden Mandel. We talked off air before you came on. Like, is he the number two guy, right? Or is he a co-number two guy? Or what does that even look like with Jaden from Buchanan?
Yeah, it seems to be kind of a co-deal. And it's unusual, but it's kind of how things have started to turn in college football. We saw it just a few years back when Jalen Henderson and Logan Fife were both here. There was the 2021 season where they just said, you know, there's not a backup, it's a competition every week. And there was one week where Fife came in, and there was one week where Henderson came in.
Yeah.
So I think it's very similar here. Keeps the number three guy happy and prevents them from transferring, keeps that competition going until when it's time for one of those guys to be the starter. But Joshua Wood got a snap as a Wildcat quarterback in Michigan, so I kind of feel like if there's a chance for the next quarterback to get in tonight, that maybe it's Mandel's turn. So maybe they both play tonight. I think it's kind of dependent on the situation. I think Mandel is a little more a guy you can put in there and try to replicate what Keane does, and Joshua Wood's maybe a little more of a risk taker, and maybe if you're down a couple scores, you throw him in and kind of just roll the dice and see what happens.
How's Jaden's arm strength, though, compared to the other quarterbacks? I would think he'd be ahead of Mikey, to be honest. Like, you've seen practices. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, he looked solid in the scrimmage, where we got to see more than we're used to being allowed to see at practice. He was 10 of 11, I believe, through the air that day. Not a lot of deep shots, but a really good zip on the short to medium game. And I mean, a lot of that's kind of what Mikey gets dialed up from Fresno State as well. You know, the deep ball is not necessarily Mikey's strength. So you could kind of see where if it's – you want to run the game plan as close as possible, that Mandel can come in and do a lot of that. And, I mean, that's just where he is right now, too. I think by the time Mikey graduates and maybe it's Mandel's turn, you know, he's a much more dynamic quarterback that really gets to do a lot.
No, yeah, I mean, I agree. And, heck, tonight might be the night, right, where Jaden Mandel takes his first snaps as a Bulldog. All right, so Cameron Braca, all right, what a story. Buchanan goes to City, doesn't even know, right, what he's going to do after that. I think he said he thought that his career is over after City, goes to Fresno State, and we watched him on national TV last week against Michigan, had 10 tackles, wasn't scared, like, taking that that tight end, right? That stud tight end, and matching up with him, and just not afraid, his fearlessness. So just how valuable of a player is him. The coaching staff absolutely loves him, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think speaking about valuable, he started the game at that nickelback position. They brought in another local, Jaden Davis, to play safety, and nickelback's kind of a question right now, so why not put one of your best safeties there at Braca? Then that seemed to be the plan. Unfortunately, Davis got ejected a few plays in targeting. Didn't seem to be his fault too badly, but Braca is one of those guys. When he first got to Fresno State last year in the spring, you hear sources, you hear people reach out and really speak up for him. And on paper, this is not a guy that's supposed to be much of a contributor. He's a walk-on from Fresno City, but you hear the extra intangibles that are coming with them, and it played out very quickly. Last year, just about earned himself a starting job by the end of the season, and now he's one of the guys on the defense. So it's been exciting to see. It's unfortunate. I believe this is his last year of eligibility. You're kind of used to all these guys having like two extra years with COVID and stuff, but that's starting to go away. So got to really embrace this season for Braca. I think he's gonna have a lot more performances like he had at Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. He was flying all over the field, and he was fearless, and just kind of embodies what the Central Valley is about, right? Like an underdog, and nobody gave him a chance, no scholarships coming out of high school. So that is an awesome story. All right, I'm curious about the running back position. I watched Brandon Ramirez in high school. Is he going to be a safety? Is he going to be a running back? Is he fast enough, right? Talk about him, where he's at. And then Bryson Donaldson, we saw him get in on one play at Michigan. What's kind of status with those two guys?
Yeah, Donaldson, I mean, he's positioned himself to be a factor this year. It's Malik Shroud's number one at running back, and Elijah Gilliam's number two, and unfortunately number three and number four traditionally don't get a lot of snaps in this offense. But, Donaldson is definitely three or four. I don't think Fresno State has any plans of redshirting him. I think they're preparing for if they're getting close to conference championship time or bowl time or by some chance playoff time, that if Malik or Elijah goes down, that Donaldson might need to be the guy that steps in. So I think tonight, especially if they can, they're going to get him involved. Very impressive. He looks the part. We knew he did coming out of high school, but it definitely carried over to college. He's playing very well, very physical at this level. And I believe only three true freshmen made the trip to Ann Arbor, and he was one of them.
Okay.
And he was one of only two that actually got in the game. So for him to be involved with such a veteran team definitely says a lot. Brandon Ramirez, he suffered an injury in camp, so it doesn't look like he's going to be available this year. Maybe he comes back towards the end of the season, but they still have him at running back. It seemed like he was kind of outside of the committee at range, so probably is going to be more of a special teams guy if healthy this year.
Okay, so how about Kosi Ajina, right? He's got a lot of playing time too, didn't he, against Michigan?
Yeah.
From Sanger?
That was an interesting one because Coach Coyle, he described Jaden Davis, another local, Kosi Ajina, and the new nickelback R.J. Regan kind of all – any of those guys could be basically the 11th starter on defense. So Ajina – he was in there. He made some plays. He had not as many snaps as Regan. I think it's going to depend week to week. Again, the Bulldogs came out with three safeties to start against Michigan, so that sets up well for Ajina and Davis to, see a lot of snaps where they would normally be just reserved to backups to Clark and Braca. But they're trying to find ways to get them involved because the safety room is so stacked right now.
Talking with Jackson Moore. All right, a couple more questions here, Jackson. Thanks again for coming in. It's always a great time with you. All right, so Harold Duvall from Clovis East, star receiver, 6'3", about 185. He's a talented player. Who are some other local kids you think are on Fresno State's roster, or Fresno State's, radar?
Yeah, well, they've also have the one other commit, Jonathan Darrington at Clovis West, known more as a receiver at West, but going to be a DB for Fresno State. So, two solid gets in this class. Duvall's one of the, I believe he's the second-ranked commit in the class behind only Jordan Thomas out of Sacramento area, who is a younger brother of a current Bulldog, one of those guys. probably would have gone to a P4 school if not for that connection. So, I mean, Duval's a big deal on paper for Fresno State. I think the guy he went up against over the week or yesterday, Bryson Baker's a guy at Sanger High School. If they can reel him in, they would love to.
And so that was a fun matchup. So there were a few times when Baker was just following Duval. And on the flip side, Baker made, I don't know if you saw it, an incredible catch on the sidelines. One of those diving catches up in the air, snagged it. So like, yeah, that's a D1 player. So yeah, so that was maybe the Kalan Baker, right? I mean, he's a Bulldog type player.
Yeah. Nevada had made a big push for him. I mean, you don't see Fresno State lose too many to Nevada. So that was the Wolfpack were considered to be a favorite there for a little bit, and Colorado State had him on a visit. Now Cal just offered him. So that's a whole another game changer. So we'll see if Fresno State can pull that one off.
All right. So about another minute here with Jackson Moore. All right. So I want to hit on this a bit and get your opinion. So, you know, 1430, Chris Pacheco does an amazing job. He's the owner of 1430. He's a Fresno State guy through and through, runs the Bulldog Bread. I saw at the station, I think it was a truck, had it, you know, he's in the sign business as well. So it said Bulldog Bread on the side of his truck. Where's Fresno State right now in the NIL? I know the collective as well. So what's that looking like for Fresno State compared maybe to some other Mountain West schools?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for Fresno State is they've tried to put together just a chest to be able to dish out whenever they need to keep someone around. I think the players that earn NIL at Fresno State are rewarded and kept from leaving the portal with enough, because that's the biggest thing. You don't want to see your guys leave. And then, of course, we saw before NIL became a factor, Fresno State would just say, hey, we need a receiver. Go grab that guy. Go grab this guy. And now NIL has kind of lowered the range where Fresno State can try to get guys. And we've seen at times some spurts that NIL comes, like with the two receivers, Raylan Sharp and Chaden James. That was a help to get some players like that into the program. So, you know, they've got enough to keep guys around, get some key players in. Probably not just a total mountain worth to go pull in a huge transfer. I know Mountain West school, maybe Boise State's got one or two of those guys, but that's a rarity. And also basketball, they had to bring in like 11 new players, and it wasn't for free. So I think Coach Wahlberg and his local connections and the support he's getting was a big deal of having a competent roster ready to go this year.
Yeah, different world, isn't it, Jackson? We're in a different world as far as college athletics. All right, awesome job as always. Appreciate you. What are some specials that you have for Barkboard, or where can people find you online?
Yeah, if you go to barkboard.com, we've got a lot of exclusive interviews and coverage and game breakdowns. And right now it's 30% off a year if you want to join. It's like $6 and some change a month that way. And if you want to join full-time on our monthly deal, it comes with Paramount Plus included, which I believe you can watch tonight's game on CBS through that. So maybe jump on that if you don't have access to the local channel. But otherwise, check us out at barkboard.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Jackson. And where do you – You're a roamer on the sidelines, right? During the games?
Yeah.
Wearing your 247
hat? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I upped my camera equipment the last few years, and I just find that being on the field and being up close and personal, I just gather more than sitting in the press box. It kind of felt like I was just watching the game on TV up there sometimes. So I like being up close and getting those pictures for the website.
And they're great. They're awesome stuff. All right. Thanks again for coming. I appreciate you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. Dave Wilson, the head football coach at Kingsburg. I think he's around the corner. He's probably hiding right now. He's going to come on next, talk about his Vikings. They defeated Dinuba last night, 28-7. They're 2-1. So always great to have Coach Wilson in the house. Look forward to talking to him next on 1430 ESPN.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair.
All right, here we go. Dave Wilson in the house, Kingsburg. And, you know, Dave, he drives up from Kingsburg area to First String Sports. I get him live, and he's always bringing me gifts, right? So throwing shirts at me, and got this beautiful Kingsburg Nike
That's a
dry fit.
That's official sideline gear right there, Paul.
So do you think if I wore this in one of your home games, right, and snuck on, you know, with one of these headsets, right, and pretend, like, would anybody notice?
No, you'd blend right in. You'd be perfect. Yeah.
And what if I somehow got on the headset and said, okay, we're going to run 2Y Spider Banana X48-7 split wide right. And, you know, how do you think that go?
Listen, I've seen some of those Traver 8th grade football teams, man. That might be a pretty good play. I'm sure that's something you have dialed in over there.
My plays are pretty simple, right? And you know what to do. Sometimes I'll just say, you know, black X.
Yeah.
Right?
Concepts are great.
Yeah, right. Motion right, handoff, bootleg right, pull. You know, we get a fairly complicated throw. Uh-huh. But I say players' names in person. I say, throw to Andreas, right?
I'll be honest with you. We kind of do that too sometimes.
Put the ball to this kid now.
We're going to call this play, but we'd like you to throw it to this guy. Yeah.
All right, good stuff. So you're coming in with your Starbucks, as always.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
on a first-name basis at the Kingsburg Starbucks.
Well, now there's two.
Yeah.
You guys are getting bigger. Come on.
Nah.
Slow it down. No, I know you're not. It's just, you're a two Starbucks town now.
Yeah.
So now you move it up to that category.
Well, we have the old T-Mobile Center there, which employs quite a few people, not necessarily from Kingsburg. And so I think that was a motivating factor right there, because that Starbucks is right there in that same complex. So.
Yeah. That was a power move by them, right?
Yeah, that's a statement.
It's a statement. Put a Starbucks right there by the T-Mobile. How many people work there? Isn't it crazy?
Last I heard, it employs about 1,500 people.
Okay.
It never stops.
Are they people that in town? Or are they probably
some? You know, being at the high school, you kind of know, especially if they have kids, they'll enroll. But I think there's a lot of commuters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny too.
The property value in Kingsburg is pretty high. So,
it is. It is. It is. So right, you're bringing in your Starbucks.
Yeah.
But so, I want, you know, we broadcasted the Sanger game,
mm-hmm.
and I had to stop off at the Chuck Wagon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's funny, right? Like, I'm on Twitter. I'm retweeting game scores and, you know, pictures, mm-hmm. and keeping people, you know, keeping them up to date on the scores and whatnot. My most liked tweet for the last month is a picture of me buying a chili dog at Chuck Wagon.
Yeah, that's
right. Got like 150 likes and all these, like, people are commenting more on that than all of my tweets about high school football.
Come on, it's crazy. It's an afterthought. Yeah.
People love their food.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we had a little conversation last night driving back from Sanger about your game against Dinuba. Always a rivalry, right? Green and green, right? Mm-hmm. You got that and proximity. So you guys came away with a 28-7 win. Just kind of walk us through, you know, the rivalry between Dinuba, and then how the game played out.
Well, you know how it is, Paul. Like, rivalries are proximity, I think, is part of it, but Dinuba's just been that Dinuba Kingsburg game, I would argue, for the last 20 years, has been a highly competitive game. You know, before Coach before CJ was there, you had Coach Sharton, and you know, competitiveness creates those types of rivalries, you know, and then it goes hand in hand when they're only about, you know, 8 miles away. And so it's always a big environment. It's always a highly emotional game, you know, and Dinuba always plays a real physical brand of football. And I'd like to think we pride ourselves on playing similarly, you know, and so it makes for a great matchup. You know, it really never, you know, there. Some just like us, that they've played a really tough schedule. You know, they came in 0-2, but, you know, losing games to Sanger, you know, who's always real tough, and then
Golden West
is this, you know, they've got the guys, you know, Coach Anderson, along with their offensive coordinator, Coach Machado, you know, he's kind of got his quarterback, and it's showing. You know, they're scoring a lot of points and playing really good defense. So we knew going in, you know, that's not your typical 0-2 team, you know, and it showed. They were real. They're just real feisty. They never stop playing. They force you to play no matter what the score is. You know, you can't take a breath, if you know what I mean. And I was proud of our guys. Our guys came in, you know, coming off the Clovis East game. That I knew going into this season, having Clovis East on the schedule, that's definitely a step up for us. And, you know, and we like to do that occasionally, just to kind of see where we're at. And it didn't go well. We were into the game, and then we kicked the ball off, and then that was kind of it. But so coming out of that game, I was real interested to see how the boys would respond. We
we've got some veteran guys, but we also have some new guys, mainly in like key positions, you know, quarterback, running backs. You know, our linebackers are fairly new, and I was happy. You know, it was a rough week just with the environment. You know, got a few guys banged up.
The heat.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of sickness going through our team, like a lot of teams. But then you compound that with 110 degree days. There was one day where we didn't even go out in pads. We went out in practice, but because of the air quality, we couldn't do that. So a lot of adversity, especially early on in the year. And so for us to come out and we played quick. I mean, we received the ball our first play. Our quarterback Cade Holt hit our wide receiver Chris Brow for about a 75-yard touchdown. Really set the tempo. And our defense did really well. You know, we had a couple moments where we couldn't get off the field because of a penalty, or, you know, we'd have them third and long, and Dinuba, man, they're just feisty. They'd get it and extend the drive. And so the elements along with that, you know, you could tell I was a little nervous about us gassing out a little bit, but our guys, they were resilient, you know, and I thought we played really well. You know, could we always play better? Absolutely. And you know, there's things we need to do a little bit better. But for the guys I got coming off a really rough loss to Clovis East, that was a good game for us to kind of come back and sort of reestablish ourselves going into the next few weeks, because it doesn't get easy. We have a really good team coming in next week out of Bakersfield, who's a sneaky 3-0 with Highland. And then we got to turn around and go to Sanger, which, you know, you've been there plenty of times. That's a real tough football environment over there. But you know, we pride ourselves on trying to play tough teams and exposing our kids to, you know, getting them out of their comfort zone a little bit, and that's going to do it. But yeah, you want to get out of your comfort zone, you go play at places like Clovis East, Dinuba, Sanger. I know those are good football communities with big size crowds and just a lot of fanfare, and you got to really be mature, and it sharpens you very much.
Well, open up with that win against Paso, yeah, and then straight into Clovis East. So I definitely want to talk about Clovis East,
sure,
in just a second, but I give some shout outs to some of your players. You mentioned your quarterback, mm-hmm, right? And Chris Brow, who's a threat as a wide receiver, you know, popped a big one against Dinuba. So mm-hmm, what's kind of the makeup, or who are some guys that, that you want to give shout outs to?
Yeah. I mean, I always start, I still believe football teams are built from the inside out, and we've got a really good group of offensive linemen and defensive linemen. They're little banged up at times, you know, but I there's some senior core leadership down there with guys like John Peterson, Trevor Nelson, and then we've got a guy who he feels like he's a senior, but he was a starter as a sophomore, Emilio Ayala. He plays guard and defensive tackle for us. Real strongest kid on our team. Really good player. And I was real happy with some of the younger guys that had to kind of step up this week. Guys like Logan Brady, guys like Maddox Verners. You know, JV guys last year playing varsity football now, asking them to grow up real quick, and they were able to do that, you know, and real proud of them. And then from there, you know, obviously the hardest position in sports, I think, is quarterback, and we got two pretty good quarterbacks, and with Jonah Lopez and Cade Holt, and Cade came out of our camp as the guy that we're going to go with, and he's been playing really well. Had a great game against Paso. I think he was 10 for 12 for about 174 yards, and struggled a little bit against Clovis East, but everyone seems to be struggling a little bit against yeah, Clovis East. And then for him to come out last night, he did really well. He was 11 for 13. He had like 273 yards, three touchdowns.
Wow. Okay.
And so that was fun. Dinuba did a really good job up front, you know, because we had some holes in our line. It was tough going running the ball. But, you know, our running back duties, again, that's a new position for us. Guys like Drew Lundy have stepped up, playing well in there. We've also put in our senior, kind of our defensive leader, Greg Ross. We've had him run the ball a little bit, so that's helped. And then, you know, we're kind of a running back by committee. You know, we have about three or four different running backs that have different attributes, and we try to utilize those. Ryan Martinez is kind of the do-all guy on offense. We put him in the slot. We put him in the backfield, and he's a real explosive player. Cade's got a younger brother named Cooper, Cooper Holt, who also is kind of a clone to Ryan, but he's a sophomore, and so he's playing a lot of football. He actually had to help us yesterday on defense playing some free safety for us as well. And then on the outside, we have Chris Brough, as you saw last night. He had five catches for about 173 yards, two touchdowns, and almost had another touchdown. Dallin Breckenridge is another player for us, a senior, big, tall, athletic kid, doing really well for us. And our tight end is a junior, Kingston Perez, does a good job for us. And so it's kind of a good mix of some older guys, but then we're asking some young guys to play some pretty technical positions for us. On defense, you know, linebackers, Connor Davidson's doing well. He's a junior, really playing that Mike backer for us. And then even we have a couple seniors that are playing, but they don't have a lot of playing experience. So it's funny because they're seniors, but they're really kind of, this is their first year. Noah Payne's playing some linebacker for us, Nick Lindgren. And then our secondary guys are doing a really good job as well. We're pretty athletic in the perimeter at times. It's just kind of figuring out what our team is, you know, and trying, as coaches, it's we see glimpses of just some really good football, and then every once in a while, you know, a mental mistake or a mental breakdown, you know, has kind of kept us from really exploding. So the good thing is I think our ceiling's pretty high, and we're getting better every week, and we got some tough games ahead of us, so we're going to need to get better.
Well, those guys were thrown into La Monica Stadium, right?
Yeah.
Expected to go up against Clovis East.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I saw what they did against Sanger last week, so just – what did you see personally from your perspective from Clovis East?
You know, it was funny because we played them week two, and they were coming off that game with the team from Utah. And sometimes film, as good as it's good, you know, as good as a tool as it is, it can also kind of deceive you a little bit,
yeah.
You know. And, you know, you're watching that game, and you're seeing a really good team from Utah, just a big physical football team. So, obviously, you know, there's moments where, you know, they're playing really well with Clovis East. I mean, as you know, Clovis East won on a end-of-the-game sort of field goal. So, kind of, you know, them coming back to the Valley, you're thinking, oh, man, these guys got pushed around a little bit. I think we can do some things here. And I couldn't have been more wrong. They're physical, very athletic. Their quarterback, you know, if he's 6'4", he's going Division One. I think his height kind of keeps him. I think he's going to Davis.
Yeah.
But what a player, man! I mean, he's a 3-year starter. I was really surprised with how physical he was. He's a stout kid. He looks like a running back. But just you can tell they're a veteran team with a lot of athletes. You know, they got some special skill players that they can give the ball to in space and. They can make a pretty good team not look really good,
yeah.
You know, so that was, you know, as a head football coach, I'm always, you know, I always look at games and think, okay, I think we could have played better, you know, which, I mean, is probably good, but good teams make you play bad. They
sure.
put you in positions to where you're not good at that spot, you know, and they expose certain spots because every team's got a hole somewhere. Still trying to figure out what their hole is, you know.
I didn't see any last night, right? Kicking game was on point. They blocked a punt, returned it for a touchdown.
And those are the intangibles, Paul.
They don't
just beat you in those spots. They returned a kickoff against us. They returned a punt, but we got fortunate they had a penalty. They do it in all different phases, you know, and it can happen really fast. You know, you're looking and you're like, oh, my gosh, you know. They score on offense, and then they, you know, they turn around, run a punt back, they run a kickoff back. You're down 21-0, and it's midway through the first quarter, and you're like, oh my goodness, you know.
that escalated quickly.
Yeah, but good teams put you in those spots, you know. And Coach Noble's got a good group. He knows that. He you know, we talked before the game. He's a good guy, and you know, he's like, hey, this is my group. I've been building this group
he
up,
has.
And it's showing.
He has absolutely mm-hmm. talking with Dave Wilson, head football coach at Kingsburg. Believe it or not, we only got like 3 minutes or so before our time is up. Yeah, I got to take a sip of your coffee.
Yeah.
all right. So, two games coming up. You mentioned Highland homecoming, and then there's Sanger, mm-hmm. and then League Washington Union, CVC, Kerman, Reedley, and Selma. Mm-hmm. So looking forward, looking you know ahead a little bit. But you got Highland. You mentioned a sneaky good 3-0. What are your expectations for next week?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a good game. I think, you know, watching them on film, they got a really good quarterback. I think he's a sophomore. And then they've got a couple really good athletes on the perimeter. They run around really well. They played North and they played Stockdale the first 2 weeks. And so, you know, notoriously, I think those teams have been kind of down a little bit. You know, I don't want to come down on them. So I was real interested with the Kennedy game on Thursday and to see them kind of, you know, beat them, you know, it was, I think it was like 30 to 17
or 15 or something. Yeah.
And Kennedy, an 0-2 team, but like Dinuba playing really tough schedule with Hanford and Buchanan. So that was interesting. That's an eye-opener. So we're thoroughly expecting a really good football team to come in on Friday, and we're going to have to be at our best. I mean, you know, and then the week after that we have Sanger, which is always, we just said earlier, real tough environment. Our league's interesting this year, Paul. You know, in the last couple of years it's kind of been us and CVC, you know, with the Donaldson factor, I called it, over at CVC. We always played them tough, but I think it's wide open. You know, you got a really good Kerman team. Washington Union's got some great athletes. CVC with Coach Arax is still really competitive. They're another team that's played a real tough schedule early on. They still got, I think they got Clovis North coming up. So,
yep.
So that's a little deceiving. You know, the records can be deceiving. But I knew going in, Coach Jenkins is a really good coach, and he's kind of built that Kerman program up. They've got a really good quarterback and some skill guys. And it's going to be the team that can stay healthy. And the team that can, I don't like our schedule. I think we play Washington Union, CVC, and Kerman back to back to back.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so, and I don't want to discount Reedley and Selma. I mean, those guys are all good coaches. Coach Francis is new, and he's really driving that Selma team. I think they're 2-1. And then Coach Gates is always prepared. He's always, you got to always, that's one thing about our conference, man. You got to be ready to go because no matter what you might think, those guys always have their kids ready to play. And so we're looking forward to it. And that's kind of the theory behind maybe beefing up our schedule a little bit in the off season. You know, is hopefully sharpen us up heading into that. You know, the main thing's just staying healthy and getting better every week.
Absolutely. So always a pleasure when you come in here, Coach. Appreciate you driving up here texting and calling after games and. You know, and you love on my students, my Traver kids. I got a couple playing for you right now. Pretty excited. Good stuff. So always good. We'll definitely have you on again. We'll do the old phone call.
Can't wait.
We can wrap it up. Or you can drive up here, get your coffee, get an excuse to get out of the house.
Get me out of the house, man. I can decompress.
Awesome. All right, Coach Wilson. Thanks. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. That's a wrap on this show. Thanks to First String Sports, Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, Jorge Rodriguez back at home base for helping produce the show. And Jeremiah as well did a good job interning and pushing all the right buttons. Thanks to Brandon Nagel, Austin Kemp, of course, Dave Wilson, and Jackson Moore. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate you. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.